Welcome to Inside Impella, Transport Talks, your co-pilot for training. I'm Shane Turner, and I'm so glad you're here. As members of Abiomed's Critical Care Transport Team, we know that every transport is a lifeline, and every moment counts in our mission to recover hearts and save lives. Today, we're diving into the critical role of training and the success of specialized adult critical care with Lisa Owen, a clinical nurse specialist at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Lisa leads a distinguished team skilled in ground, fixed wing, and rotor wing transports, specializing in patients with acute cardiogenic shock and advanced heart failure requiring mechanical support. She'll share why rigorous, ongoing training, robust team dynamics, and comprehensive communication strategies are central to their success. Let's talk.
Hi, everyone. My name is Lisa Owen. I'm a clinical nurse specialist, and I'm the acute shock program coordinator at the University of Rochester Medical Center. And that is in Rochester, New York, to clarify that. Just a little bit about the U of R. We are amongst the nation's leading academic centers. We are the region's cardiogenic shock hub and the region's only heart transplant center. We do a lot of advanced therapies here. We have an extensive LVAD program. We've done over 900 VAD implants, and 350 of those have been minimally invasive. That's a procedure without having to do thoracotomy. So a lot of advanced therapies happen here. And because of those amazing things that we do, we've had to create a critical care transport team to be able to serve the community and serve throughout the state. So part of my job as the shock coordinator is overseeing the adult critical care transport team. And I've been one of those transport nurses for the past 13 years. So I'm really happy to be here today. Thank you so much.
Excellent. Thank you. Now, you guys have a very unique transport program. So unlike a lot of models, your transport team is comprised of who?
It is a nurse-led team, and the nurses are all, they all work on the cardiac ICU.
Okay, so they are full-time staffed in your cardiac ICU, and then when they when the need arises for a transport, they get pulled from there and go out on what type of transport vehicles do you guys operate?
So we go ground, fixed wing, or rotor wing transport. And the nurses actually work part of their transport shifts as part of their regular hours. So it's a lot of satisfaction with that. It's a good retention tool for our unit as well.
Okay, good, good. Now, do you go out for any type of transport? Is it specially reserved for just certain types of patients? Tell me a little bit about who you transport.
Our patient population is patients in acute cardiogenic shock that require mechanical circulatory support, and also the patients that are in advanced heart failure that require additional therapies. And a lot of those patients also need to have mechanical support as well.
Okay. So, you know, we have transport teams, and then we've heard of specialty teams. You guys are like the sub specialty transport team. So that is a very niche market of patients there. What kind of training and onboarding process does it take to get someone even ready to take such a specialized skill set like that?
So for our cardiac ICU nurses, we require them to be fully device trained and work here on the unit for 3 to 5 years before they can apply to the adult critical care transport team. So on a daily basis, these nurses are taking care of acute shock patients that need balloon pumps, impellas, and ECMO, VV and VA ECMO we manage here. And then once they join the team, orientation is really dependent on their availability. You know, we do have an in-house training program where we go through our protocols, we do simulation, we work very closely with our ground and flight crews to do training for them with simulation as well. But really where they get the most training is when they're actually going out on a real transport. So 3 to 6 months for the average person to come off orientation. And then once they're off orientation, we do mandatory monthly training. And that training is done with our surgeons, with our intensivist, with our device reps, so with Abiomed, with Aero. We work very closely with our perfusion team with training on ECMO. So a lot of hands-on training for them.
That's great. So 3 to 6 months to onboard, and then you know, it's multiple years required to even get to the point that they could apply for the transport team. What does your ongoing education and training requirements look like? It seems like with such a specialized skill set, that's probably pretty intense as well, huh?
Yes, it does. A lot of it is simulation. Each month when we have a transport meeting, we also train. So I got to bring up our acute shock resource nurses, because they are dual trained with our transport team, and our transport nurses are dual trained as acute shock resource nurses. And what they do is they manage all the circulatory support in the cardiac ICU. We have recently switched over our ECMO program to the bedside nurses taking care of ECMO and not having specialists. So those shock nurses have stepped into that role. So they are experts on all our devices. So at any given month, so we have training coming up Monday. And the training that we have Monday is all going to be troubleshooting and case scenarios of things that have happened on the unit. And just, we also debrief on all our transports that we do each month as well.
Okay. So let's say that you guys get requested to do an Impella transport. Is that always just with a nurse team of these shock resource nurses, or do you bring other disciplines depending on how sick the patient is? What's that team composition look like?
Oh, even the sickest patient in the state is transported by our transport nurse, fully nurse-led team.
That is so cool. So if you were to give advice to a transport program who doesn't do as many Impellas and these sick cardiogenic shock patients, if you were to give some advice to another transport program, what would you think the most important thing that they would need to know is?
So I think a solid training program, like continuous training, whether that be monthly, quarterly, and very close, good working relationship with your device reps. You know, Abiomed for us, like, they're not just our device company. They're actually part of our team. We look at our reps as our teammates, you know, pretty much every day we see them here. We're always talking with them, and probably 4 to 5 times a year, they come in and do training with us.
That's great.
So that's really important to have that good working relationship.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think it's not so much that the training is so in-depth, but it's frequent, right? Because if you have such a tight skill set and you may not see these patients, you know, for a normal transport company, they may not see these patients but once or twice a year. You know, so as Abiomed has launched this new critical care transport training department, which is where I work with several other trainers, and, you know, we're going around and talking to these transport programs, you know, it seems that very infrequently are we discovering that the transport crew's angst and anxiety and uncomfortability, it doesn't lie in these super complex clinical topics. It seems like once we get in there and start conversing, you know, it's like the cardiovascular and the hemodynamics, that's well understood. You know, these flight nurses and paramedics, and, you know, and depending on the team that, you know, they are comprised of different disciplines, they understand how to take care of sick people. But now you insert this Impella, right? This big shiny thing in the room. It's this distracting AIC, and people are cumbersome of which button they need to push. And they're nervous that they might accidentally shut something off if they hit the wrong thing. So what we're finding is being the greatest utility to this transport specific training is just getting hands-on time with a device. You know, it's like getting the console in front of you and understanding that if I hit this button, what the menu changes and what does that mean? You know, it's one thing, I think, to see this training, you know, purely didactic, right? You go through the guided online modules, or maybe you've had an in-service and they go through a slide deck, but it's a complete other when you take, you know, this theoretical knowledge and now it becomes relevant. So do you guys do regular reviews of case studies? So do you take your transports that you've done and review them?
Yes, we do. Yep. Both what happens on the unit, what happens in the cath lab, and what we see through transport.
And what would you say your biggest lessons learned have been kind of over the development and as your team's progressed and become more highly trained? What were some big, like, aha moments for you guys?
Well, I think the biggest thing is just being able to mitigate any issues that you identify. Number one, when you first call and get report. That's one of the things that, you know, this transport team was first put together in 2006. And, you know, when I first met with you, I had thought we had done over 300 Impella transports, but we're actually closer to about 425 when I looked back at it. We didn't have a lot of protocols in place. You know, the Impella has changed over the years. But I think the biggest thing right now is our nurses fully understand how the Impella works. They understand the waveforms, the flows, the placement signals, and the troubleshooting. You know, if an Impella you know, goes too far into the ventricle. They've been certified and trained by Abiomed to be able to pull that back during flight. We've had a really good understanding now of what sometimes does cause bleeding issues, and we're able to mitigate that before we even leave with the patient. And just, you know, understanding the P levels, the flows, you know, when we need additional like inotropic support in these patients, having protocols, like we don't want to leave the hospital unless we can have an index above 2 with that device in place. So just a true full understanding of not only the patient hemodynamics, but the hemodynamics involved with the device in place.
Sure, sure. Yeah. And I think, you know, that approach there, it's comprehensive, right? You don't have all your eggs in one basket. There's all these parts kind of have to come together. And I like what you said about having a good thorough handoff, because, you know, if you've done this job for any length of time, like that is such a high risk for that patient safety area there, right? Like making sure that we're using good, thorough communication. And, you know, this is something we talk about too, like during the loading and unloading portion, you know, like you need extra sets of hands. This is a cumbersome transport. There's a lot of lines. There's a lot of things going on. You know, now is not the time that we use brevity, right? Like in high stress situations and we're talking to one another, we tend to shorten it because I don't have a lot of brain space left to tell you the whole sentence. I just want to shorten it. Yeah. But I see this kind of nasty habit because you go to like transport these patients and you're like, hey, well, what's the levofed running at? And they go, 4. And you're like, 4 what? 4 milliliters, 4 micrograms, 4 micrograms per kilo, right? So it's like when we talk about these like high stress moments, it's like, hey, I need to be, you know, I want you to be very succinct with me. I want you to be very clear. Like, I don't want you to grab that thing and move it. No, I want you to hold the AIC by these handles. And when I move the patient, I want you to come with me and set it on this table. You know, so it's a lot of good communication techniques. Do you guys have any focused training on that kind of high stress team dynamic or, you know, communication, or do you just let things kind of happen organically because your crews have worked together for so long?
Well, I think it's that continuous working together and continuous training. You know, like on any given day, we'll have our ground crew AMR come pick us up in the rig and we'll take the mannequin out and we'll drive around the city and simulate all kind of problems with the devices. And as a whole, the entire team, and that includes our specialty paramedics, our EMTs, our respiratory therapists, and our transport nurse, you know, they've got to work through all those scenarios together. You know, and I mentioned earlier that with our EMS vendors, we all work as part of a team. You know, whether we're going flight, helicopter, fixed wing, we practice with all of the critical care crews around the area. That's a priority for us.
Good, good. Lisa, you said that you guys have a close relationship with your, you know, device reps and consultants. How does that integration look like with your local Abiomed team? I know I've been up in your neck of the woods a couple times and done some training with the local flight teams that weren't your organization, but how does that regular training look like with our teams up there?
Well, first of all, we have them all on speed dial. And, you know, anytime we have an issue, we always call them. And most of the time we can resolve the issues ourselves, but we always follow up with Abiomed. You know, we talk them through the process to make sure that we're doing things correctly. You know, sometimes they have additional input for us. But again, including them in that training that we do is such a big, big piece of that.
So you kind of have them on retainer for troubleshooting or weird things we've come across. But on a regular basis, they're involved and integrated into your normal training sessions as well?
Yes, they are.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah, like I said, about 3 to 5 times a year, they come to our training.
I think that's huge. You know, we get asked often if we could come out and do like a train the trainer kind of program, right? Like there's a lot of flight programs who are like, hey, we've got great educators on staff. Can you just come tell them all the things they need to know and we'll just handle this in-house? And, you know, the frustrating part about that is we tell them no, simply because the pace at which the technology is developed, the pumps are refined, new data and evidence, you know, comes to light, and we recommend different best practices. It's such a frequent update that if I just gave you a big bowl of knowledge and said, hey, go forth and conquer with Impella classes, you know, in just a few months, it would be outdated or inaccurate. So I love to hear that you guys have that regular FaceTime with the local teams. You know, and we get that reciprocated from us. You know, we hear back from the local teams. It's like, oh, you've got to work with this program. They're so great. You know, and just that constant development, I think, is probably
And I don't want to say the sole responsibility of how you guys came to where you are, but I would venture to say it would be difficult to have done it without them.
Oh, I agree 100%. You know, I transported my first Impella 13 years ago, and I don't even think I can count the number of changes and upgrades that Abiomed has made. That's why I love the company so much. It's such an innovative company that takes feedback from its customers. Mm-hmm. You make your changes based on the feedback that we give, you know, what our patient needs are and things that we have seen in clinical practice as well.
Right, right.
So having those constant updates and refreshers and, you know, being informed of what new information is out there, it's just really imperative for the team to be able to be such a high performing team on these devices.
That's good. So let's do a little comparison. So let's say your average flight program, when a flight comes in, you know, obviously we make sure it's safe and the weather and the equipment mm-hmm. and all that. But on the medical crew side, you know, they may get just a smidgen of information, and really everything's taken with a grain of salt as well, right? Because the telephone game is alive and well. It's the, you know, mm-hmm. the unit clerk at the hospital who took a message from the sending physician, who calls the flight team, and then the dispatcher tells the pilot, you know. So by the time the medical crew walk in, they've gotten what could be fifth or sixth party information. And now we're like, okay, what do we got? Right. And then everything kind of hits us at once. With your team being so integrated into the hospitals, and I'm sure that that transfer process, you know, behind the scenes, they have knowledge of that too. Could mm-hmm. you walk me through kind of what your team's process looks like for accepting a flight and getting prepared for it?
Yeah. So one of the things I can tell you for us is really the last several years, we have done extensive outreach and training with our referring hospitals. So one of the things that happens now, and I'll just pick Buffalo. Buffalo is about an hour and a half from us. When a patient is first diagnosed in cardiogenic shock, that's when our surgeons get the phone call. So we know right off the get-go that there's somebody out there that may need some advanced support. Our team works with the referring team to help manage those patients. So we really, in most cases, have them medically optimized before we even go to get them for transport. So then we'll have the call go through the transfer center. And as the transport coordinator, I'll get the phone call and I'll get the details as well from the surgeon that is accepting the patient. And from there, per our protocols, our risk assessment sheets and things that we have, I'll make the determination on which is the best way to send the team. For us, we do try to go ground to the majority of our transports, unless it's someone that immediately we need to expedite and advance therapy for them, or get them back here and get them in our cath lab or get them to our OR. But usually it's a ground transfer. We will call, arrange the transportation with our ambulance crew. And when they come to pick us up here, we actually do a team huddle. We will update them on the patient. We'll talk about roles, get in the rig, get all our equipment check done. When we get to the outside hospital, again, it's the same thing. We'll do a quick assessment. We'll meet as a team, talk about everybody's roles, and then we'll go through the process. It's a very distinct order on how we transfer these patients on MCS. So no matter what the device is, the order is always the same for us. The device is always transferred over first, then the medications, the monitor, and then the vent if they're an intubated patient. And then once they're on the gurney, it's a quick 5-minute huddle, checking on the device, the airway, the medications, blood pressure, and then out the door we go. And we've knock on wood, we have not had any complications. We've been very lucky.
That sounds like a very thorough process. That was gonna be my next question is, you know, what's your complicated cases look like, but taking all those steps really mitigates a lot of the unknowns and you guys come in prepared. So I think we transport patients for two reasons. So I think if we were to put them in categories, we either bring them back to the resources or we bring resources to them. So it sounds like you will go out and get a patient that can be really in any kind of phase of this cardiogenic shock decline, like early onset.
Yes.
They've already got some device or some support on board, you mm-hmm. know, or, you know, at the end, and we have, you know, everything running. Do you ever bring specialists with you and initiate these advanced therapies at outside centers, or they always come back and get that started at your home hospital?
So the only one that we do differently is actually ECMO. We have a mobile VV ECMO team that we will actually go to an outside hospital and cannulate someone on ECMO. But for the Impella device, These are usually patients. Sometimes they just need recovery time. Like if the hospital is kind of exhausted all their resources, we'll bring them in just to recover them here. They may be patients that need an advanced therapy workup, such as LVAD placement, or potentially someone that may need a heart transplant as well.
Okay. Well, what else do we want to mention here? We talked about training, both initial and ongoing. We've talked about your process. We talked about kind of your clinical capabilities, and it's all nurse-initiated, protocol-driven. Compared you a couple times to what a normal program looks like. You kind of threw out a couple pearls of advice there. Anything else that we can kind of fit in this little package and put a bow on it?
I mean, really, the only thing I really have left to say is, you know, we take pride in what we do, and we serve a community. And part of serving that community is even working with all your other competitors, you know, like our other flight crews in the area, ground crews. Like, we work closely with them. We support each other. Mm-hmm. And that's what gives you the best result for the community.
Yeah, that's huge. It definitely takes a village, doesn't it? Well, Lisa, we appreciate you joining us this morning. Thanks for sharing some kind of behind the curtain there of your very unique transport program. It's cool to think that a single mechanical cardiac support device has their own specialized team just for them. That's neat.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Inside Impella Transport Talks. We're here to support you in recovering hearts and saving lives. For more Impella Transport information, visit us at heartrecovery.com/transport. And if you like our podcast, please head to your favorite podcast platform to subscribe and give it a 5-star rating. This podcast is sponsored by Abiomed. The information, findings, and conclusions expressed are those reached independently by the authors.